facts you already learned about diffusion in the lines and give some more probably technical details. So I will start with a very short description of branch structure of the lung acinus, which I learned essentially from the works of Evan Pybet. But here I will focus mainly not on the lungs themselves, but how they can be modeled. So what was the geometrical model of the lung? And I will essentially speak about Kitaoka model. So you will see in a few moments. Then in the second part, I will speak about diffusion, oxygen diffusion. And this part, this work was started by the master by Marcel Piloche in our laboratory. And in particular, I will mention several results of PhD thesis of Maddalena Felici. And in the end, I hope to have some time to discuss lung imaging and how these numerical simulations can improve our understanding of this difficult problem, how to analyze the image that you get by magnetic resonance and MRI. So, well, just to remind, you saw this picture several times. I think they're beautiful, so I cannot resist to put them again. Well, my focus today is only this part of the lung, so the acinus. So what you find in the tip of a bronchial tree. It's the main gas exchange unit of our lungs. So you can see it properly. Believe me that this size, it's only 6 millimeters in humans. So let me just remind again about the structure. It's essentially a dichotomic branching structure. So you can see the entry here, where this acinus attached to bronchial tree. Then you can see still branching, and then branching, etc. So there's still 8 levels of branching. And this structure densely filling the volume. So we have all our lungs filled with this structure. I have to say that the acinus contains approximately 90-95% of air. So it's essentially the volume, all the volume of our lungs. And this structure has extremely large surface area to pass the oxygen and transfer to the blood. So it's around 150 square meters. So probably smaller than the size of this room, but still quite a big area, which is in small volume. Well, for what is going on inside this structure, as it was explained by Bernard, in the bronchial tree, there is a convection flow, but when it enters in the acinus, the velocity of flow becomes quite small. And finally, in fact, not in the entry of the acinus, but in the entry of subacinus, 1/8 of the acinus. In the future, I will not bore you with this differentiation between acinus and subacinus. Then the velocity of flow becomes small, and the central transport mechanism is diffusion. So we consider a stationary regime, so when the diffusion doesn't depend on time. So essentially, we can introduce the concentration of oxygen in this structure, or in physiology, speak about partial pressure of oxygen in air. So this function doesn't depend on time. This is an assumption of this model, but it's quite a good assumption. And instead, this function depends on the position. So there is a high concentration of oxygen because here the air is rich in oxygen, and then it progressively decays because of absorption of oxygen towards the blood. So in the stationary regime, we speak about Laplace equation, so in the bulk or in the volume. Then we assume a constant concentration of oxygen in the entry of the acinus. And the most probably interesting part is what happens on the boundary. So on the boundary, so it's alveolar membrane, you have first on the left-hand side of this equation, you have the diffusive flux from the volume towards the boundary, which is essentially diffusion coefficient and the gradient of concentration. But since we consider this gradient on the boundary, it's normal derivative of the concentration. And this flux is proportional to the flux which goes across the boundary. And then it's carried away by blood in microcapillaries. And since this boundary has some resistance to transfer of oxygen, it takes some time to cross this boundary. we have a quantity which is called permeability of the boundary. And this is nothing else than a conservation law. So all the flux which goes from the bulk at the boundary, it is equal to the flux which cross the boundary. So there is no miraculous disappearance of oxygen somehow. So this is what is called in mathematics Robin boundary condition or radiation boundary condition. So this problem is well posed. It's a very classical problem, more than 100 years already known. So there is a lot of studies in mathematics about this problem. And in principle, well, in some domains you can solve this problem explicitly. For example, in a sphere, you can find an analytic solution to this problem. But you know, you have to be very skilled in imagination to consider this unit as a sphere. So we choose a different strategy. We decided to try to solve this problem numerically. But still, even to solve this problem numerically, the structure is too complicated. And there is another difficulty that, in fact, it's not so easy to even for a given structure like this to give a full parameterization of the structure to implement it in a numerical way. So what we need, really, we need a model, a geometrical model of the arsenide, which would capture the main features of the structure, but would be more simply for numerical implementation. So let me just mention several properties which we would like to preserve. Well, first again, it's dichotomic branching, filling a given volume. We would like to have some control surface area and some other physiological scales like average length of branches. We would like to have some random realizations of our geometry because in our lines there is no two arsenides which would be identical, so all of them are different. So we would like to reproduce such variability in our model. And of course, we would like to have something which would be simple for numerical use. And fortunately for us, such a model has been developed by Japanese physician Kitaoka and co-workers in 2000. So this is a simplified arsenide. Well, you can see it's not the same geometry, naturally. But let me convince you, I hope during my talk I will convince you that in fact for diffusion, this structure is a quite good model. But first, how can we obtain such a three-dimensional labyrinth? I will start with the two-dimensional case because it's easy to explain, but it's exactly the same in 3D. So the idea is very simple. We have some given volume, for example, this square, and we would like to fill this volume with the branching structure. What does it mean? We would like to have from some entry that every point will be accessed and there is no loops in our structure. Well, you may say that, okay, I have already such properties here. You can access any point from the entry. But again, as Bernard explained in his talk, if you have just one big arsenide in your legs, it doesn't work. So we need to introduce some structure inside, some branching structure. So how can we do it? First, we introduce some small small squares here. And we choose the scale just from physiological parameters of the structure we'd like to obtain. And then we would dig in this structure. We would like to suppress some walls to create some labyrinth using some simple rules. So I will explain these rules. So we start with, we choose some entry point. For example, this would be the entrance of our arsenide. We assign the index 1 to this current block. And then, from this point, we can suppress either this wall or that wall. So we have two directions to choose, and we choose randomly one of them. I choose this one. So what we do now, we suppress this wall. So we connect this point to that point, so these two blocks are now connected. Then, we use several rules proposed by Kitaoka. Well, first we suppress the index 1, and then we shift all other indices by minus 1. Well, in fact, since there were no other indices, we have nothing to shift, so for the moment it's easy. Then, for previously current box, so this was the current box, we assign the index which was the largest index plus 1. Well, the largest index now is 0, because there is now indexes at all. So we assign 1 here, and for new created box, we assign the index large status plus 2. So this would be 2. And we come back to the scheme, so we do it iteratively. So again, we have the current box is always 1. So we start from this box in green. We have only one direction to dig. So we have only this choice now. So we just suppress this wall. We suppress this index. We shift previous indices by 1. So it became 1 here. And we assign again for previous current box, it's the largest index plus 1. So here we should put 2. And here we should put 3. But in fact, you can see that this box, we cannot dig from this box anymore. So because all directions already taken. So it's useless to have this box in the list. So we can just suppress it from enumeration list, and we can just take the index 2 for this one. So the rules are easy. Let me just show how it works. Now again, the current box 1, we have two directions. We choose one of them, for example, this one. We dig this wall. So we suppress this one. We change the previous one. So we have 1 here, 2 here, because this was the previously active, and this is number 3 because it's new activated. And now you continue again and again. So from this one, you change the indices, you start from this one, etc., etc., and you get this approach. So it's very easy to implement, and as you can see, it works in the same in 2 dimensions or in n dimensions if you want. Well, I will not explain why this tricky rules for enumeration allows you to avoid the loops. No loops in the structure, and there's a general property. It's not so difficult to show, but well, it would be too technical now. But now we created this structure, which satisfies all the required properties. So it is dichotomic. It fills the volume. There is no loops, and it has a large surface area, which is maybe comparable to the physiological one. And we have random realizations because, again, when we started, you have a choice. So when you make a choice, you create one structure. For example, we choose started from going here, but you could do the same considerations starting here, and you get another structure. So you have this 2D labyrinth, and simultaneously, you can consider it's skeleton, so it's just the structure written by sides and edges. So then you can do the structure more physiologically interesting. For example, you can introduce what is called septum membrane. Here, I forgot to tell you that one square is intended to represent 4 alveoli in 2-dimensional case, and one cube in 3-dimensional case, it would be represent 8 alveoli units. So you can introduce this septum membrane, which separates the different alveoli, to make it more realistic. So this, as I told you, it's exactly the same in 3D. There is only one defect that you can easily see. At the entrance, you have not dichotomic branching, but trichotomic. But it's quite difficult to avoid such kind of construction because it's three dimensions, you have 2 directions to start at the beginning. So this is a tiny defect of this consideration, but all other points, all other branching are dichotomic. So for this geometry, well, now you can compare this simplified numerical asinus with a real one. And let me also mention that what you can see in solid here is the space where the oxygen can diffuse. So oxygen diffuse in this solid part inside. And similarly as in the asinus, it's diffused inside the structure. Well, the natural question you can ask, is this model geometry accurate enough? Well, this question would be, in fact, meaningless without specifying what kind of problem you'd like to solve. Because, for example, if you would like to study some hydrodynamic problem in this structure, that would be completely useless, because it's known that hydrodynamic problem, Lagesson's equation, is very sensitive to geometrical details. It's not the same in general to have this branching like this, like that. It's 90 degrees. It's not the same to have flow in a pipe with square profile or with round profile, etc. So that would be useless. But again, I focus that we study diffusion here, and diffusion has very amazing property that it has no memory. So it's a process when it's only random walk with no memory. And the fact that there is no memory, diffusion somehow averages out the effects of specific features of the geometry. So in fact, we may hope, at least, that introduction of such a simplified model wouldn't be too rough approximation of the geometry, because in fact, the particles wouldn't really care if it is a square profile or not. What is important, for example, is the scale. If you take the structure twice bigger, then you need more time to travel from one point to another, and that's a parameter to which diffusion is sensitive. Diffusion would be sensitive also to branching. Do we have loops or not? And I will come back to this point in the end of my talk. But to local geometrical details, diffusion is insensitive. So let me go now to this second part of the talk, so to study oxygen diffusion. So here it's now the problem is well posed, so it's again the same description as before, so Laplace equation with this Dirichlet boundary condition at the entrance and Robin boundary condition on the boundary. And now we have a simple geometry like that. So in principle, we can solve this problem numerically by different methods. The method which was used by Maddalena Filici during her PhD thesis was finding elements. So still, even for this geometry, it's not so easy computation. Let me just show you the mesh. So how you solve it numerically, introduce some mesh inside the structure, and then you discretize this problem. So even for one small piece of this structure, you can see the complexity of the mesh, and even create such a mesh, it's not so easy task. Then you solve, discretize these equations, and finally solve them. Here's a typical result. So here, in red color, it's the area where the concentration is high, so this is the entrance. And in blue is where the concentration is low. So, of course, this will depend on the ratio between diffusion coefficient and permeability. This is the famous ratio lambda, which was discussed yesterday, and I will speak about it in a few minutes. So, one of the important results of the study is to show that the concentration of oxygen in the asynus, at least at rest, is not homogeneous, it's not uniform. You can see the drop of concentration, for example, during this path, along this path. And this was something which was quite unexpected in the physiological community. So the partial, the notion of this partial pressure, average partial pressure of oxygen is not always applicable to such structures. Well, I will not go in discussing details the results of Maddalena. I just mentioned another result which is very important for the study. That in fact, he showed numerically, she solved this problem for this geometry, so this continuous problem, Laplace equation. And she showed actually that the solution of this problem, for example, the total flux of oxygen is a function of physical parameters D and W, can be computed in a much more simpler way. In fact, it's sufficient to study random walks on this skeleton, and you can, in this way, you can compute the same flux with, you obtain almost exact correspondence between two of them. You have to rescale somehow the results, but after this rescaling, the computation is very accurate. And this is a crucial simplification, because as I showed you here again, these computations require a lot of computational time and effort. Here, you can do it in an hour. You can just do it now if you want to make simulations like that. And it takes milliseconds to make the analysis. So you can So in fact, you can go make even a step further, and you can develop this analytical theory using this result. So because again, now without solving the problem in this complex structure, but just studying diffusion on a tree structure, the problem becomes much easier and it can be solved almost analytically. So let me present this result. You can use the, what is called branch by branch computation. So I will make some probably too much details about it. So again, here we have a continuous problem. Let's start with one branch. So that's something, the most easiest case. So you have this branch. So what you do, you introduce, you split it again in boxes, individual boxes. So this is a typical size A of the box. Then you say, okay, you have in principle for this continuous problem, you have the distribution of concentration in each box. But you may assume that in fact, this the variation of concentration can be all this concentration inside the box can be represented by one efficient concentration, one average concentration all over the box. So in fact, it reduced only one point instead one box. And also, I added some entrance side and exit sides. So here you put your concentration. Now, sorry. So we can just enumerate the sides from 1 to L. L is the length of this branch here, L, AL. And we also use the notation 0 for entrance side and L plus 1 for exit side. So now we connect the sides because the particles can go from one side to another, from one box to another. And we can just rewrite this continuous problem but in discrete terms. So we put the constant concentration here. We rewrite the Laplace equation plus this boundary condition on this top and bottom walls in this way. So here, in fact, there is this part is the Laplace operator, and this part is the reaction or absorption of oxygen along this boundary, which is represented by parameter sigma. And sigma is related to lambda, which is, again, the ratio between two transport coefficients, D and W. And then you have also flux across this wall at the tip. And this is a point we just write in a, by definition, as I explained at the beginning. So we have the flux, which goes across this boundary, which is proportional to the concentration at this side. And here you have permeability. So this is just discretized version of the same problem. But now we can forget about the structure and consider only the diffusion into only one chain of sides. And this is an easy problem that can be solved exactly and analytically. Well, I'm not going to present you all the details. It's a really classical one. But let me explain what we can do with that. Well, we can first, let's write this exit flux just to substitute, instead of using W, substitute this definition. So we have, for exit flux, this is our boundary condition. It's proportional, it's equal to diffusion coefficient, concentration, and divided by lambda. So this is imposed boundary condition from the beginning. Now, since we know how to solve this problem exactly, we can calculate all concentrations for each side. In particular, what we can calculate the flux which enters the structure. And this flux turns out to have exactly the same form, just we have the concentration at the entrance divided by some another parameter lambda prime. And for lambda prime, you can write an explicit formula. Well, it's not probably so easy formula. You have some number of coefficients here, for example, U and V. These are two coefficients which depend on sigma and L, so on the length. But again, we have explicit formulas for these two coefficients. You can find them in our paper. So, but what is important here is that this new parameter is just a ratio between two linear functions of lambda. Well, it's not perfectly true because this is an explicit dependence, but also you have implicit dependence in terms of sigma, because sigma depends on lambda here. But let's forget about it for the moment. It can be, I will explain why. But just keep in mind that you have lambda prime, which is just ratio of two linear functions of lambda, with So now we know how to solve one branch. Let's do the next step. We have a branching point. So we have one mother branch, and we have two daughter branches here. So we would like to connect them here. So we just put the same side. And now what we can do? We have this imposed boundary condition here, so again the same flux, and we can calculate the entering flux here. We do the same for the next branch, and we calculate the flux here. Now, at the branching point, we have just conservation law that the flux which exits from mother branch is the sum of two entering fluxes here, so they go in this way, and the since it's the same side, the concentration is naturally the same. So now you can divide the first equation by the second one. So what you obtain? You obtain that the exiting flux from the mother branch here, divided by this concentration, is just the sum of two fluxes here divided by these concentrations. And each of these fluxes you know explicitly. So you have these functions. And again, you can say that this in this way you can introduce new lambda prime. So what you get here, you obtain a new boundary condition for the mother branch. Now you can forget about two branches, and you can just use one branch here with a new boundary condition. And you know explicitly how this new parameter lambda is related to previous one. And now you can imagine that it's quite easy. You can apply it for one branches, for one pair of branches, but then you can continue these applications up to the roots. So let me show how it works. For example, we have a symmetric dichotomic tree like this. So again, here is our initial boundary conditions. And then we use the same rule. So for now I call it lambda 1. So we have the sum of this 1 over this function f for two branches. Assuming that these two branches have the same length, we have Lk equal just to L. So we have m terms, here m is equal to 2, so just two terms of this function. And here let me just introduce this weird notation just to avoid writing m here. It's just division by 2, so it's exactly essentially the same function. So you have from this computation, so you consider this branching point, and you consider it for each branch here. So you can, again, replace this branch point by a new parameter, here, lambda 1. Then you do the same thing. You apply, again, exactly the same function because the tree is symmetric. And you substitute again, and again, and again. So in this way, you can continue, and you can go up to the root. So what you obtain is the root. You obtain the total flux which enters your structure at the root. It would have exactly the same form. The total flux is diffusion coefficient, concentration is the entrance, and here you have lambda n if you have n level of branching, and lambda n is just n times application of the function f to itself. And in fact, the tricky point and the beautiful point about this formula that now, let me remind you, this function itself is ratio of two linear functions. So this function is only a ratio of two linear functions of lambda. And it's a well-known property in mathematics that if you apply such a function to itself, you obtain again the ratio of two linear functions with another coefficient, but it will be the same. And if you apply again and again, apply n times, it will be always a ratio of two linear functions. And you can calculate explicitly the coefficients of this linear function. So again, I'm not going to show the formulas, but it's quite easy computation finally. So it means that here you have a complete analytical exact solution of the problem. So if you would like to, well, it depends which problem you would like to solve, but if you need the total flux, and this is the quantity you would like to study for the oxygen transfer in the arsenic, you can express this oxygen as a concentration at the entry, and you have exact formula for this flux. And from this consideration, you can now study many properties of this symmetric trees. For For example, just let me mention one property that suppose we consider the limit of infinite tree. So n goes to infinity. You can show that in fact this parameter converges to a very simple thing, amazingly simple with respect to a complex one. And the most strange probably unexpected property of this result that there is no dependence on lambda at all. There is no dependence, no lambda, neither lambda, no sigma. Because to obtain this result, in fact, you have to then take into account that we have sigma here, and sigma depends on lambda. So I skip some technical part, but finally, what you get is this constant. So it's independent of lambda. So that's probably the first thought is a bit contradictory to our intuition, but this is a very interesting property, a very strange property of trees, especially of large trees. And that's what Bernard called magic trees, because in fact, it means that the total flux in this limit is independent of lambda and independent of permeability. That means that these branching structures, at least infinite one, would be completely robust against the permeability change. And this is one of the reasons what Bernard explained about mild epidema. When you have some epidema, it means that you have some very thin layer of water on your boundary alveolar membrane. And this layer of water increases the thickness of membrane, so it decreases permeability, and you have less oxygen which goes to the blood. It's more difficult to cross the membrane. So, but this kind of structures would be completely robust against this problem.
So the permeability goes to zero if nothing can go to the
membrane. Well, then what enters is the two limits are not exchangeable. I mean, if you have infinite tree, of course, this trick is for purely infinite tree. So either you take this limit first, and then lambda goes to zero, and in this case, it's independent. The inverse is not true. And but the important, I agree that it's surprising.
Yeah.
But well, we can discuss later. But what is the practical? Of course, our lambda is not infinite. And for the asynchronous we have 8 levels of branching, and for sub-asynchronous it's in fact it's 5 levels of branching, which is responsible for diffusion. So it's quite far from the infinite limit. And this is the reason why we have problems with epidema, because otherwise we could be completely robust against that. So, but the practical consequence that in fact you would have for a finite tree, this limit means that you would have some region in values of lambda, where the flux would be very weakly dependent on permeability, or almost independent. And this is again the explanation, kind of confirmation of the explanation Bernard gave yesterday. So this is one of results. Again, then after you can play with this formula, you can study how it depends on the branching, on the number of branching points, on the number of branching levels, of the length of your tree, etc. So you have exact analytical solution for the problem. In addition, well, this is for symmetric trees, so we have this formula. But even if you have any tree, non-symmetric, you can use these results for extremely fast and very accurate numerical computation. Because what you need, instead of making random walks on a tree, can just apply several times this function, which would be different. Now it would be different for different ads, but it's a very rapid computation. If you have a tree with n sides, you essentially need the log of n iterations, because you just do this level by level. So it's only the number of levels what you need. So it's very rapid. So now, in particular, you can apply this result to real asymmetry. Because now we can use, again, we cannot make simulations here in this real structure, but we know, thanks to Evalde, the geometrical parameters of this asymmutant, we know what are the lengths of individual branches and what are their connections. So we can reconstruct its skeleton, and then we can do numerical simulations using this technique on the skeleton. And then you can calculate the flux on the real human asymmetry. So in fact, we can go even a bit step further. We can say, OK, you have a structure which is not real asymmetry, is not symmetric. But let's maybe think that if you introduce some symmetric tree which has similar properties, for example, the same total area, the same average length of branches, and the same branching order, so the geotonic, maybe it would work. Because for this symmetric tree, we have analytical expression. And in fact, if you do simulations, you obtain this result that for five orders of magnitude, it gives exactly the same result. So you can construct for real human asymmetry, you can construct some simplified symmetric tree, which has nothing to do with the real geometry. But after that, you can use the formula, analytical formula for this tree. So this is how it works. Now let me go. So let me go to the lung imaging. This work was realized with Jean-Miguel Guillou and Bernard Sapoval. So first, very schematic, again, let me just remind some very schematic principle of MRI that you heard about it on Tuesday evening. So if you have some static magnetic field and you have some nuclei, first of all, to do lung imaging, you cannot use oxygen or nitrogen. So we have to introduce some another gas which would be magnetic field, which would be sensitive to magnetic field. And there are several choices. Well, the one choice which is usually used is helium-3, because these are the nuclei of spin 1 half, and for this nuclei, you can use optical pumping to make a hyperpolarized state. So again, you have spins up, spin down, and using this optical pumping, you can increase population of spins up with respect to spins down. And you can do it, here it's a typical case of thermal situation, but by optical pumping, you can get polarization which is almost close to 1. So almost all nuclei are in one polarization. And since we have nuclear up, nuclear down, we have local magnetization, which is parallel to the magnetic field. And now there is a trick I'm not going to tell, but you apply another magnetic field, oscillating magnetic field, and you can turn this magnetization in transverse plane. So this is not equilibrium state. In time, it will come back here due to relaxations. But we shall not consider this effect now. But what happens? You have all the nuclei which turn around the magnetic field. And they turn with Larmor frequency, which is proportional to the magnetic field. And here, gamma is the magnetic ratio. This is the fundamental constant of a nucleus. So now, you can use in transverse plane, you have x coordinate and y coordinate of magnetization. It's very convenient in a complex notation, so you can see the transverse plane as a complex plane. So you can see the magnetization as a complex number. And then, if there is no relaxation, you can say that everything is determined by the phase or the angle in this plane. And the phase in a constant magnetic field, the phase of time t is just the frequency, so the velocity of rotation multiplied by time. So that's very easy in this situation. Not so interesting. Now, the situation is much more interesting than you have in homogeneous magnetic field. For example, you create some gradient in one direction. So here the field is smaller than here. You have exactly the same phenomenon. So you have, again, you turn magnetization transverse plane. But now, depending on the space, some nuclei turn faster and then the other. For example, if I'm here, I will turn faster. Here, I will turn slower. So this is a way to differentiate different spatial points in space. And now, for the nuclei, so if the nuclei were immobile, then just turn each of them with its own frequency, some faster, some slower. But But in practice, nuclei diffuse. So, and now to calculate the magnetization at given time t, so instead of using this formula, you have to follow the trajectory. So I'm here, I turn with one frequency. So I'm here now, I turn faster. Here I turn still faster. Then I can come back, etc. So you have to count all shifts of phase along the trajectory. And you just write it as integral. So it's very classical. So just the integral of your frequency, but here you integrate over the trajectory. Now there is still one difficult point, that in fact this trajectory is random. Because you take just one nucleus, and you have a random trajectory in Brownian motion. So you get some random phase. You cannot get the signal from one nucleus because it's too small. So what you obtain the signal from all the nucleus in a given domain or in a given voxel. So in fact, what you get, you average over all the nuclei in your domain, and you obtain the signal which is proportional to the average of this expression. So this is a very, very basic introduction, or rather reminder. So now you can do the same in numerical simulations. So in fact, to understand how this technique works in experiment, and to compare the experiment with numerical results, we can simulate this behavior. So again, we consider the same geometry. We introduce particles inside. So now we consider that there are some nuclei inside, helium to the nuclei inside. And they diffuse, so we model the random trajectories of the nucleus. And during each, along each trajectory, we calculate the magnetization. So this is just discretized form of the integral I just wrote before. Well, here, in fact, I use also dependence on time. So here there is a profile, temporal profile of the magnetic field. And here is a projection of the trajectory, so a specific form for linear gradient. And then you repeat the simulation. So you did you do one simulation for one trajectory for one nucleus. You calculate this phase, and you repeat for the second one, the third one, etc. And then you repeat and take an average. So this is the basic Monte Carlo way to make simulations to calculate the signal. And what you obtain, you obtain the signal as a function of physical parameters that you introduce, in particular of the gradient intensity, so how steep the increase of the magnetic field in space, and also there is a time at which you measure. So these are the parameters that you fix. Also, there is another parameter, diffusion coefficient, of course. I have no time to go into detail. Let me show the results. So what you can get, you generate the structure, you fix the gradient, and you calculate the signal. So you obtain a very typical curve like that. So this is the signal as a function of gradient intensity. Now we can ask. Now we would like to compare the signal with experimental data. But we can ask ourselves, okay, this is one realization of the asymmetry. What would be for the for another asymmetry? Because again, with Itaoka model, we can generate a lot of structures with the same branching properties but different geometries. And if we do this, we get some upset results. That in fact, here you have different structures, so but they are generated from the same algorithm, just one different random realizations of the same asynus, and you get different results. Now we have a question: which curve should we use? Because how can we compare now the numerical results with our experimental results? Because all these geometries are meant to represent a healthy asynus, and they are all equivalent in this way. So all these curves should be equivalent. Well, the solution is very easy, because in fact, in our chest, all the asyni are randomly oriented. They are not like bricks on the wall. So we have to reproduce our result, in fact, average over all possible orientations of the asyni. And if we do this for the same geometries, but just average over all possible orientations, all the curves collapse onto the signal, single one. So that means that here now, this curve is completely independent of the realization. And this is a hope, again, this is an argument at least, that the diffusion is insensitive to specific parameters of our model. Because for different models, obtain the same curve. Now, this curve can be compared to experiments. I will not show the result, but it was realized by Diane and Eve during her PhD thesis at the University of Orsay, Virginia Tech. So let me just go in a few minutes left to comparison with now pathological structures, because suppose that now there is a big disease, important disease which is called emphysema, which this I will not give exact definition, but essentially it's partial destruction of the alveolar tissue inside the lungs. So, and it's quite important problem in medicine of the lungs. So again, we would like to know, and in fact, this imaging technique, the main purpose of doing imaging of the lungs is try to understand, try to detect, separate healthy lungs with respect to disease lungs, emphysematous or other lungs. So what we need again some geometrical model to make simulations of this emphysematous SME. So how can we model them? Well, it's known that emphysema may lead to either enlargement of alveolar ducts, and that can be modeled as just take on a larger scale of the same structure, or it also leads to partial destruction of the alveolar tissue. That's what I told you. Let's consider the second one, and it's quite easy, in fact, to model that you just take this healthy structure and randomly suppress some walls between them, between two channels which are close to each other. For example, in this structure, the nuclei cannot go from this point to that. They can go, but they have to go in a long way. Here we suppressed the wall, so we created a passage between these adjacent channels, and now diffusion became faster. So because the nuclei don't need to go long term, they can go directly. So diffusion became faster, and the phasing of nuclei became faster, so the signal decreased more rapidly. So this is the basic idea how this change of the geometry can be reflected in the signal that we measure. So again, here we have a healthy structure, and then we gradually destroy the internal structure. So here, for example, we have around 15% of internal structure destroyed. And here you have the corresponding signals. So again, signal is a function of gradient intensity. Here is a healthy asinus, and the first one is with 15 percent of destroyed walls. So we can see that, for example, if you fix some gradient, you work at this is a typical value for clinical NMR. You can distinguish these values. So there is a drop in the signal, which is quite considerable. And with this technique, with these numerical simulations, we can understand different features about this process. For example, we can see that if we increase the gradient, the difference between healthy and unhealthy emphysema becomes larger and larger. So one can think how to improve real techniques. So I have to just go to conclusions now. Just let me summarize what I told you about our studies. Well, first, rushing structures present very interesting properties. And these are important properties. And we have to take them into account when we like to understand how the lungs are working. Because there are some models, for example, we consider lungs as a porous medium, just some disordered porous medium. It's not representative because the lungs have a branching structure, and it's crucial and for the oxygen diffusion and for the imaging. Then, up to my knowledge, the Kitaoka model is probably the best model of the geometrical structure of the asinus, and particularly suitable for numerical simulations. Then, oxygen diffusion can be studied on the skeleton tree of the model or realistic human asinus. And that, of course, is a crucial simplification for the analysis. And in addition, you can solve this problem almost analytically for any asinus and analytically, fully analytically for symmetric trees. Then tree structure are robust against the change of permeability, at least in some range of values that prevents us from mild edema. and this partial destruction of the branching structures or creation of loops in the structure by emphysema can be potentially detected in this diffusion-weighted magnetic resonance imaging. So, well, for perspective, there are a lot of them. I do not bore you with listing, just that it's important to study from various aspects, from theoretical, numerical, and experimental, everything about restricted diffusion in branched and porous structures. There are a lot of work already done. I just presented a very small piece of work, but still the remaining work is a lot to do. Yeah. So thank you very much for your attention. So if you have questions, ask them now or email me. And all the papers I mentioned, you can find on my webpage.